Kent Tesee, Farm Management Analyst, and I'm the forum coordinator at FarmFest.
Kent, 2018, an election year, and you have primed up the forum schedule with some great opportunities for Minnesotans to learn more about candidates running for some very important seats.
Well, I think, 2018 obviously is a very important election year, both at the federal level and the state level. And Minnesota has some very high profile races this year, with two U.S. Senate seats due to Senator Franken's resignation earlier, and then, of course, a very high profile Minnesota governor's race and some very competitive congressional races. And so we've kind of put together what I've dubbed the World Series of candidate forums of FarmFest. We'll have four major forums, and we're going to kick those forums off the first morning at FarmFest, which is August 7th, with a U.S. Senate candidate forum. And we'll have at the U.S. Senate candidate forum both two DFL candidates, the current Senator Tina Smith and her challenger on the DFL side, Richard Painter, and then the two Republican challengers, Karen Housley, the endorsed candidate, and Bob Anderson. And then that afternoon, and we'll have a panel of ag leaders asking questions during that panel. Then that afternoon, we're going to have a congressional candidate forum at 1:15 on the 7th of August. And we'll have all the major candidates from the 1st, 2nd, 6th, and 7th congressional district invited to attend. And almost all have confirmed they will be there. So that should be a very interesting discussion, again, about farm bill, ag trade, and other issues. Then the middle day, we're actually going to have the governor's candidate forum. And we're really looking forward to this one, 10:30 in the morning on August 8th. And all five major candidates for governor have committed to participate. On the Republican side, former Governor Tim Pawlenty and the endorsed candidate Jeff Johnson. And on the DFL side, Congressman Tim Walz, Attorney General Lori Swanson, and the endorsed candidate Aaron Murphy. So that should be really exciting. And then the final day at August 9th at 10:30, we'll have the other U.S. Senate candidate forum with Senator Amy Klobuchar and her main challenger, Republican Jim Neuberger.
Yeah, it's really a unique opportunity, Kent, because not only will you have people in ag leadership positions, leaders of commodity groups, farmer leaders that will be putting together questions for these forums, but you also allow people in attendance to ask questions. So it's a very interactive opportunity.
Yeah, actually, for these forums, we don't take questions from the audience, but because we have a panel and at each of the forums that ask the questions. But if people do have questions that they would like included or certain things, they can certainly send me an email ahead of time, and I'll make sure that that gets in the mix. We like to keep it moving and not have people there that are trying to maybe disrupt the forum. So, but if people have questions, they can certainly submit them to me ahead of time, and I'll make sure that the people that are actually asking the questions at the forum have that information. And I think it is important. You know, sometimes I think a lot of folks just think, well, they don't want to get involved in politics, but your vote does matter. And knowing where all the focus on these forums is on issues related to agriculture, rural families, rural communities. So it is important to know where these candidates stand on these various issues.
And like you said, that the people that will be asking the questions are well-versed in what's happening to farmers, not only in Minnesota, but across the country. They're facing a lot of challenges, aren't they, Kent?
Right. Yeah, it's ag leaders that represent the major ag organizations and commodity groups. And then on one of the forums, we use some folks like yourself that are in the agriculture media, which deal with these issues every day. So, no, the people that are asking the questions are well-versed. They have broad memberships in many cases or broad constituencies. So they're out there every day in the field and kind of have a pretty good pulse of what the main issues are.
FarmFest, August 7th, 8th, and 9th in Redwood County. For people that would like more information, I know there's a website. It's Idea Ag or something like that.
Right, ideaag.com. And I guess before we jump off of Farm Fest, we'd like to mention, besides the candidate forums, some other great forums we got going on during the 3 days, August 7th, 8th, and 9th as well. In fact, one I'm really excited about, the governor candidates in the morning on August 8th. That afternoon, we're going to do a major forum on water issues in Minnesota, and we got just a super panel put together. Minnesota's DNR Commissioner Tom Landwhite, and Warren Formal with the Minnesota Ag Water Resource Center, and State Senator Bill Weber, and some other folks. But just this week, we added Dennis Anderson, the well-known outdoor columnist with Minneapolis Star Tribune, who's been fairly vocal about water issues as they relate to agriculture. So that middle day will be just a super day with the governor forum and then that water forum in the afternoon.
We've seen a lot of market volatility here with the trade disruptions and everything else that's happening. And Mark Schultz, it looks like, is going to be back to talk about what's driving prices.
Right. We got Mark Schultz. He'll be the Farm Fest Minnesota Farm Bureau breakfast, pancake breakfast, and kicks off that middle morning from 8 till 10. And during that breakfast, which has kind of become a tradition, Mark Schultz will be there to talk about the grain and livestock markets and give his overview. And the first morning at 9 o'clock, we have Kent Beadle, who's with CHS Hedging. And he's going to talk about ag trade and the influences on the market as well from 9 to 10 on the first morning. So, again, some great forums, 9 to 10 the third morning. We got some folks from Minnesota Department of Agriculture, University of Minnesota, that are going to talk about some of the financial and personal stresses in agriculture today and how some resources to address some of those issues for farm families.
Anything else scheduled for FarmFest this year that you want to make sure we touch on today?
Well, I think we always want to mention the grand finale at FarmFest every year on Thursday, August 9th in the afternoon is the Farm Family Recognition Program, and that's become a real tradition at FarmFest. And this year, I think we're going to be recognizing 80 county farm families of the year from throughout Minnesota, and that's always a real special event that kind of wraps FarmFest up each year.
Well, let's switch gears here a little bit, Kent, and talk a little bit about what's happened to commodity prices, specifically the drop in soybean futures. And for farmers that have crop insurance and they're looking at their premiums and the drop and how everything might calculate this year, should producers expect that their crop insurance going to offset this low price scenario that's been taking place, or what calculations are going into it? What's your outlook?
Well, first of all, with crop insurance, of course, it isn't one size fits all, because people, farmers out there, first of all, some farmers take enterprise units, which is all acres of a crop in the same county, and some take optional units, which goes down to individual sections in a township. And certainly any farmers that have optional units are going to be in a better position, especially in those areas that have been kind of hurt by the heavy rains early in the growing season with some crop loss. Beyond that, of course, it depends what percentage of coverage you have. You can go anywhere from 60% to 85%. For those farmers that have 80 or 85% coverage, certainly they're going to be in a pretty good position potentially if they have any type of yield loss to collect crop insurance payments. I did some calculations a little earlier in the week, and with soybeans, if depending what your APH yield is, but at 85%, you basically start collecting indemnity payments at your APH yield. So if you'd have any yield at current November soybean futures prices, now if prices go down, that would enhance that. If prices go up between now and November, or between now and October when that price is finalized, then that would decrease that. But at today's November soybean futures, basically on bushel one of yield loss, if you're in that 80-85% coverage level, you're going to be pretty close to collecting payments. So I think what this means for farmers is, as we get late in the growing season, especially with things like aphids and fungicides, you really need to evaluate what the yield potential is on your soybean crop out there, because if you already think you're not going to get your APH yield, it probably doesn't make a lot of sense to put a lot of extra money into the crop. And so I think you need to work with both your agronomist and your crop insurance agent to know where you're at. Now, with corn, we're not quite there. I'd say corn, we're probably maybe somewhere between five, depending where we're at with December corn futures, probably 5 to 10% drop in yield before you'd start collecting payments at an 80 to 85% coverage, to, depending on the situation. But certainly, it's something to pay attention to as we get late in the year, and you're looking at maybe putting some late season inputs into either corn or soybeans to really evaluate yield potential and know what your crop insurance coverage is.
Bouncing off that a little bit, as we look at work on the farm bill, we're starting to see the conference committee names released, as we should expect that work on the 2018 farm bill will pick up here pretty quickly between the House and Senate. And as you look at the Title I program, you look at crop insurance and some of the amendments that came from both the House and Senate, and potential changes to those risk management tools, Kent, what are you paying closest attention to?
You know, there's always a chance. You know, both of the bills in the House and Senate came out fairly clean. There wasn't a lot of differences in the Title I or crop insurance. In fact, crop insurance, very little change. There were some amendments offered, but they never got included. Title I, a little change, I think, in our difference in the two bills in eligibility and limits on adjusted gross income. I think also one of the bills, I think the House bill, eliminated the Arc County individual program, which wasn't used very extensively. The Senate bill did not. So, you know, I don't see, you know, it's possible there could be some amendments that get added in, but usually in the conference process that doesn't happen. You know, the big battle here, well, the biggest difference is conservation is one, because the House bill eliminates the Conservation Security Program, which is conservation programs on working lands, and the Senate bill keeps that. And then the little difference in maximum CRP acres, one at 25 million, one at 29. And then the other big difference, and where the big battle is going to be, is the food and nutrition title. And if they're able to reach some resolution on that, we'll probably decide if we get a farm bill done yet this year or not.
Yeah, what happens with SNAP's probably, like you said, going to dictate if we see an extension of the current farm bill or if we get the new one in place. I did want to ask you, too, about the trade uncertainty and really to find out what those conversations have been like at the bank for you when you sit down with a farmer and you're trying to pencil things out and you're looking at the finances and you're looking at all the uncertainty and trying to formulate a plan based on that has to be such a challenge right now.
Well, it really is. And you know, I guess it really the bottom line comes down to, again, we always talk about the beginning of the year when we're doing our cash flows. We look at break-even prices for corn, soybeans, if you're producing hogs or cattle or wherever we're at. And what it really comes down to is risk management. If we have opportunities to protect ourselves and lock in some prices on at least a percentage of our production to take that risk out, it's always important, and it's really important in the situation we're in now. And we saw that this year with soybeans. I mean, early in the year, really up until mid-May, we had opportunities to lock in profitable prices for soybeans this year. And even on corn, we had some opportunities. And obviously, a lot of those opportunities have disappeared, and that normally happens once we get out to the end of June, 1st of July, we see prices taper off. This year it tapered off much more quickly and much more dramatically, so we'll see what happens here going forward. But again, I think producers need to pay attention if for some reason we'd have some weather issue or the other thing, as bad as the situation is with trade, if all of a sudden we would start to work towards some resolution with either China or NAFTA, I would guess that would be a pretty good spur to the market. And if that happens, I think producers need to pay attention and not assume that it's a permanent situation. If we get back to where there's break-even level or above, producers really need to pay attention to those price levels.
Last thing I have for you, is it the reality of at least some farmers that even though the Trump administration is saying, trust the process and we're going to get you a better deal in the end, there are going to be, or maybe already have been, some casualties dealing with the consequences of these trade negotiations that aren't going to be farming when that new reality gets here?
Well, I think that's certainly a risk out there. Obviously, if this the longer it carries on with this trade situation, makes it more difficult. You know, we're talking about market prices for this year, but if this a trade battle carries on past this year into 2019 or longer, we have a real problem in our country with our crop and livestock production, because we in most of our commodities we rely on exports. We produce more than we can consume in our own country, and if we don't have solid export markets, we're going to have some financial challenges going forward. So it's going to create some problems ongoing here beyond just 2018.